Hi, you're listening to the TL Podcast. My name is Thomas Le Huang, and I am interviewing someone who seems ordinary, but who is achieving extraordinary things. That is the quest of this interview. G'day, Josh. How you doing, mate?
Good, Thomas. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So we are here with Josh Canellis from Wisebury Peninsula, an amazing man. And you will see why. He's one of my heroes. So, Josh, thanks for being here. You have won the Salesperson of the Year 60,000 times now. Maybe it's time for somebody else. So let's go through the results. But if you don't mind, with the kind of podcast I do, I'll go a bit everywhere. So be prepared.
Sure.
So let's start. You were in the room. What was the feeling?
It was exciting, you know, like awards, as you know, for me, I'm fairly humble when it comes to this sort of thing and just honored to be a part of that sort of group. But it was very exciting. Yeah, there was a good buzz around the team. We were nominated for quite a lot of awards, so I think it was quite good, especially for some of the new guys.
Yes.
Just to be excited to be nominated and have a chance and realize that, you know, we are one of the power teams in the network.
Yeah, I don't think it's just for the guys, because I saw some of the spouses, even Chris Barnes' wife, mate, she was of the Richter.
Yeah.
She, because and for them, it's exciting because it's the one time in the year or one of the few times when they see that achievement in their partner too, you know, and the office they're working. So the reason I ask you, because you've won a few times, so normally it shouldn't be a problem. You know, for you, it's like, all right, I've been here before. But then Latari's in the room, then, and she's probably thinking certain things too. I mean, because the excitement is also for her, right? We're talking about the sacrifices of spouses. She's one. And then there's also the fact that you have Anthony McVicker, who's pretty heavy in your office too, and is quite high in the entire network, let alone the entire Central Coast. So there has to be some kind of, not anxiety, but a bit of nervousness. What if, you know, yes or no?
Yeah, I think that's natural. And, you know, like it is good, as you say, to have Latari there, to see Chris, you know, set up Beck for a whole night. And, you know, he bought her a dress and it was pretty exciting for him as well. And to include your partner, like especially for Latari, like I know how much she sacrifices for me to do what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that real estate is the hardest job in the world, but there is a part of real estate that doesn't allow you to switch off, because once you do switch off, you can cost yourself opportunities, and that means opportunities for yourself and your family. And Latari is really supportive of that side. You know, she doesn't harp on the fact that, hey, where are you doing? Where are you? What are you doing? She's supporting me in the fact that it takes a lot of commitment in this job to be at a higher level. And I think that it's probably until you're on the inside, and until even for Latari now, she sees it as well, or her friends. And there is quite a lot of effort that goes in to try and be at a high level, but consistently at a high level as well. So it's pretty exciting to see her reaction. That was my main thing, to have her there and see that reaction. That was great.
Yeah, because when I was not going to go into family as sacrifices yet, but we're here, so I might as well talk about it now. So when the winner was announced, it was you. What happened? What happened? What happened in your head? What happened in your... I mean, it's not just for you. You know, hey, Latari, we've won. Thank you for your sacrifices, right?
Yeah, so it was super exciting to see her reaction. She grabbed me straight away. She screamed. You know, she's a high-energy lady. And just to see that was super exciting for me, to see the team in the background. You know, it's all a bit of a blur when that stuff happens, because it happens so quickly.
Yes.
But, you know, Jody and Rod, and just to see all of that, and Troy and Sharon. But, to have Latari grab me and be so excited and sort of scream in my ear and look at my face and look in my eyes, that was nice.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So tell me, we were talking about sacrifices. What are some of the sacrifices Latari had to go through? Because you have a stepson.
Yes, correct, yeah. Look, I mean, she's, as you know, she's got a beauty clinic or a cosmetic clinic.
Yep.
So she's doing a full-time job whilst she's studying. We've got Carson. Carson's just turned 9 years old. My hat off to her with how amazing, and this isn't, you know, just, it's amazing to see someone who's basically performing at my level with her own business, or if not even higher, and then to be able to juggle all those other hats as well. It's a talent, and it's not something that I could do as well as she does. There's some things that we know we're good at and some things we know we're not, but she's just amazing at being able to juggle all of those different tasks. But it does mean that it's a sacrifice with me and my time. Sometimes I'm not there for dinner, or I'm not there for bedtime, or, you know, I'm not there for football games and things like that, and that can be difficult, you know, because I can see how excited Carson gets when I am there as well. So I surprised him actually earlier this year. I wasn't going to go to his cross country, and I said to the boys, "Look, I'm going to go." And I showed up there, and he was so excited. He couldn't believe it. So he was like waving, and he was excited. It was great. So, but there is a lot of sacrifice that people don't see. And that means not catching up with family, not catching up with friends, not being there for your immediate family. And that is a very big juggle that I think a lot of people may not get right. And I'm not saying that I've got the perfect juggle, because there's definitely times where I think I let people down by not being there because work is the focus. But when you consider if you've got your, we talk about the three circles, the family, the business and the personal, you can never be 100% in one of those circles without the other two sacrificing.
Yes.
And that's a big part of how I try and juggle my time and make sure that I'm present in all three, but there's always variance about how much you're involved in each one.
Yes, but is there any moment when maybe enough is enough? There's a bit of conflict, because as a salesperson, we tend to forget and we tend to take things for granted. After a little while, my spouse has been helping me with this, you know. So after a little while, it's almost like it's reset to zero. What have you done for me lately on top of all the things that you've been doing, right? So,
correct.
And they have to get to a level where they feeling, hold on, I'm doing all these things. I don't feel appreciated. I don't even think that he noticed what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So is there any kind of level of conflict, any levelers that you can share with us? Because there's going to be a lot of salespeople that are going to be in between these two games.
Yeah, and I think gratitude goes a long way. I always try and make sure that I have gratitude. I think Latari's taught me a lot of gratitude about my life and how well I don't get me wrong, I've got myself to this point by working hard, but it is a good life that we lead, and we are able to do nice things because we both work so hard. But having that gratitude for your partner and realizing that not everybody views things from the same perspective, and not everybody knows how hard your day is internally. And even if you try and articulate that to someone, that you can't explain exactly everything that's happening in your head.
Yeah.
So having your partner on the same page supporting you is a big part of that, so that you don't have that friction, or you don't have those moments. There's always going to be the ups and downs, and there's always going to be some friction around, well, you know, I feel like I'm doing more, I feel underappreciated. I think that's just being a human being.
Yeah.
So it's about recognizing that then, and then maybe pushing yourself a little bit extra to make them feel appreciated and make them feel like you are there to support them.
Yes.
And that works in both ways.
Okay. Yeah. So do in a week, do you have like special Latari time and then special Latari and Carson time? On top of your job, I mean, are they, for the lack of a better word, are they also an appointment as a client at some stage in the week?
Yeah, so Latari and I try and spend, even though we're both still working, on a Thursday.
Yep.
That's my day out of the office. Generally, it's probably one of my busiest days on the phone, so it's hard to juggle that side. But at the same time, she's also very busy with her business. She's got staff, so she's doing all of that. So it's transitioned from when she was a full-time nurse to now having the business. Her level of busyness has gone through the roof, because she's doing everything. She's studying full-time. She's running a full-time business. She's got staff. She's doing Carson. So she's probably now at that level where she's even busier than I am by a long shot. So I'm starting to see what it was like being with me for the first period, and I'm like, I appreciate that. It's good, you know. And we actually had a conversation this morning where she said, I've got half an hour. I really just need to, because she'll normally call me at some stage in the mornings, let me know how Carson went going to school. And she said, I've really got to get into this stuff. I'm sorry. I wish I had more time. And I looked back and she thought I was upset. I was like, no, I'm proud of you. You need to push yourself into that level where your time, whether it's just half an hour by yourself to reset, or whether it's half an hour where you have to get things done where your staff aren't constantly talking to you and taking up what is a crucial part of your day. As she thought I was upset with her, but I was actually just proud that she'd set the boundary and said, no, I really need to do this. That's great. Mm-hmm. So Thursday is really the day for us. That's what we try and do. Cassie goes to after school care that day.
So what do you do then? That you can share with her.
Breakfast, lunch, we go somewhere and we chat about things. We have good conversations and we just, you know, we might go for a walk or we might go to the beach for a swim.
Yep.
Anything to just sort of slow it down a little bit and try and get ourselves where we're comfortable. And there are some of those days where it's full on and we both look at each other and we go, did we really spend today together?
Yes.
But if you have that mutual understanding, I think it's much easier. Yep. And then Sunday we try and make a family day with Carson. So that's our day. We go for a drive, or we'll go to the beach, or we'll go and kick the ball around, and yeah, we'll do things as a family without tech if possible for him, and that's normally quite good too.
Yeah, listen, I've seen him and I've seen you with him. I think Carson's very, very lucky because as a stepfather, you're investing a lot, and I think that from the little I've noticed in Bali, you actually do treat him as if he was your own son.
Absolutely,
that's an amazing thing. But I truly believe that it is harder for the salesperson of the year to balance family. So if you manage to do this, that's even better. Because let's talk about some of your results here. You look after how many listings right now currently?
On average, 20 to 25.
On average, 20 to 25. We're in the middle of May 2025, which just we just come out from... What is it? The election. And some people are probably going to say it's not possible. 20 to 25.
Yeah.
So how do you look after them?
Look, it is a balance as well. Like when we're talking about balance, there's some things that some listings where owners will only want me to be their main contact, only want me there, only want me talking to them. The new real estate, I guess, method is having a business unit, which I'm only just starting to get off the ground at the moment with that. And I think that that's where a lot of the high performers are succeeding. They do have a business unit. They have someone that's looking after a lot of the buyer inquiries or doing the things that allows the lead agent to do the things that they're really successful at and not getting bogged down with paperwork and things like that. So I'm only just starting to get to that point now because, as you know, even as salesperson of the year, I was unassisted during that time.
Yes, that's correct. You were doing it by yourself.
Yeah,
yes.
And managing the team as well, which it has...
We're going to talk about that. Right? We're going to talk about your sales relationship.
So I guess that's the struggle where people see, okay, how is it possible? We have a great team back there, so I do put some of the boys on some of the listings, which is part of the way that we work, and that's great because they're all hard workers. And if you're leading from the front, they're always chasing anyway, and that's my... I guess that's the way that I run my life, is that if you're leading by example, people will always want to do better, and you will create even the person that's the newest as a strong player. You know, it's like any team. If you're a part of the best NRL team, even if you're not the best player in that team, the whole team will rise and will play better.
Yeah, which we will talk as a sales manager, okay? Yep. But still... Is it possible for one person to, first of all, get 25 listings? And here's the thing that we're going to talk a little bit later on too about, but Anthony runs approximately that kind of number of listings too.
Yes.
So here we have two top sales people in the office, and between the two of them, we're carrying 50 listings.
Yeah.
So people are saying, you know, there's not many opportunities out there for the moment. And I look at two guys doing 50 by themselves. And in your office, you have another four salespeople, I think. Yep. So how is it possible?
Yeah, it is possible. I mean, you have to have structure. You have to allow yourself to run that many at one time. You need to be good in your quadrants as far as knowing some buyers, knowing your market, being an expert out there. That is the way that you can run this, because there's always opportunities between those listings as well. And some of them, I mean, are very different price points. As you know, they go from sort of their $1 million range right up to the one at $16 million that I sold. And there's a big variance in between. And a lot of agents do have a profile so that they concentrate on a certain level of property.
Yeah.
Because we're doing so many, and Anthony and I were there by ourselves for quite a while. So we learnt to, you know, list in quantity and also look after larger areas. But if you've got systems and processes in place, you can run them. You can. And it wouldn't be that every agent wants to do that. I don't think that every agent would want that. And I've got other mates within the industry who have said, that's a lot. You know, that's too many. I don't think I want to do that. But we're used to that side of things. So it's about structure of knowing how the process starts from the moment you list someone to the end goal to when they settle, and having those structures in place. And we do have the office support for some of that paperwork side of things, but mainly we're doing a lot of it ourselves in order to make sure that our clients still feel like they're getting a great service, which they are.
Yep.
And you can sometimes drop the ball, but I think any agent has that in their career.
Yes.
And that's where you've got to learn from those mistakes and make sure that you're moving forward and not repeating that same mistake.
Right. Now you're going too fast for me. How the hell do you get 25? Because that's what they're thinking. They're going to go, all right, let's talk real stuff. How do you get 25? Because you probably don't have the time to do cold prospecting anymore. You don't have the time to go door to door and door knock anymore, right? I would like to say to people that recently you started also to go outside your area of your minor. You went into Kilkea, which is a few suburbs away from you.
Right.
And you're now the number one agent in Kilkea too. Mm. So what is it that you do differently to the run-of-the-mill real estate agent out there who is still door knocking? There are agents who, after 20, 25 years, are still having to call prospect every single day. There has to be something.
I think it comes from, and I'm one of the top agents over there. There's a couple of other agents that do really well, but there is a consistency in the time that I've been in the industry that people appreciate. They appreciate that I have honest conversations, that I know my market, that I can talk to them without having the usual smoke and mirrors that real estate agents tend to have.
Yep.
It's that perception and it's that consistency that has allowed me to get some great results. Off the back of that, the word of mouth then comes into play and people talk about you in a positive manner. And that is how I've based my career. That's how I've set myself up. And it's not an overnight thing. It's not something you can do overnight. And a lot of people, I think, I remember talking to you about a post that I put up where people say, oh, you're so lucky. There is no such thing as lucky when it comes to this industry. Sure, you might be lucky to be with a lead agent that's a great operator and learn from them and take that information. But as a lead agent yourself, there is no such thing as luck. And I don't think there's any high performer out there that sits there and says, I'm lucky from the fact that it all fell in my lap. Not lucky from the lifestyle that we get to leave, because, you know, it can be a great lifestyle if you get it right. It's more so you've done the work to get there. You've put yourself in that position and you've made yourself noticeable to the public, to the people around you who go, you're a good operator. I appreciate that you get great results and you've got consistency. And all of those things come together so that people reach out to you. There was a time when we first started, I'm like, how do you get the phone to ring? You know, I wondered from Rod and he said, it'll just happen. And this, you know, it'll just be patient. It'll happen. But I realized you have to make it happen. There's no such thing as it just the penny drops and then it happens. Yep. You have to create that. And I've actually been lucky enough in some ways that I don't do a lot of marketing or I don't do a lot of, you know, self-marketing or promoting and things
like that. Social media, yep.
No, it's like I'd say I'm quite average at that side of things.
Yes.
But what I'm not average at is my motor to continue to work, to push, to try and get back to people, to make sure that I know if there's opportunities there that I'll get it and to get those best results. And to get the best results, it requires a structure in place so that you don't miss them, because if you do miss them in some of the markets like Kilkea, there may not be another opportunity. So it's easy come, easy go, and you've just got to continue.
So are you saying that you work the SMS pretty heavily?
Yeah, I definitely do. Okay. You know, I'm always looking, you know me, I think the last time we went to conference, I sold quite a lot of properties before I left, but then I still was disappointed that I didn't get one done. And that's me as a person. I don't think that I'm anything special. I don't think that I'm a unique talent. I know that consistency will always get you to where you want to be.
Yes.
But it requires drive and self-drive. There is nobody out there that motivates me more than myself. you know, because as much as, look, Latari is my biggest supporter and she will push me and she'll say, you've got this, and if I need a pep up. But at the end of the day, it has to come down to you, because you have to have that self-drive. And I always hear from people as well, if they reach out or if they want to talk to me about things and get some advice, and they say, you know, who motivates you or who drives you? How do you get that? You have to have it within. And if you don't, I think it's a big mistake in this industry that people just believe because you're in the job, you're going to be successful. And that's not the case.
Yeah. You just touch on the word drive, and I've sent salespeople to you. I've sent even my business partner to talk to you, because I said to him, listen, the guy is doing 25 listings. You're not. So he's doing it by himself. You have a team of people around you. How come people sit down with you, they get you maybe to share? There's only two things. Either you're not really giving them the real advice, or there is something else. I mean, someone like you must sit down at some stage and go, hold on, I can give people advice, but there is something they're not doing. You're talking about that drive. What is that?
I think connection is a big thing, and understanding that when you're sitting down with people, there's a purpose for why you're there.
Right.
And as agents, a lot of people take it quite lightly that we're selling a family home, somewhere where kids are born, they play, you have memories. You know, those people have been there roughly on average 7 to 10 years or longer.
Yes.
And they at that point have all of the emotion in the home that you're sitting in. So connecting with them on a level that makes them feel comfortable to realize that they're going to be the best buyer at that point. You know, because if you get buyers into a home, they've got half an hour to make a decision. Most people spend more time researching a vacuum cleaner online than they do before they buy a $2 million or a $5 million or a $10 million home. You know, they look at it twice and go, yep, we're comfortable. This is us. Here's our offer. It's quite incredible when you break down that side. So yep. Having that connection and realizing, okay, what is your purpose? Why do you want to move? Why do you want to leave? What are the good memories here? I think connection is the biggest thing. And then also having energy and them realizing that you're there to help, not just the typical salesperson.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of people, and I've seen it so many times when I've been out with other agents or even watched other agents where they miss the key points. You know, they're already thinking about the next question. They're not listening to the person, and then they almost ask. The person talks to them, gives them an answer about what they're thinking, and then the sales agent goes straight on to the next question, brushes over it like it's nothing, and yes. Almost asks the same question on repeat, and you go, they just told you that answer. So it is, for me, more about connection and energy, but it's also about having that knowledge that you know what you're doing and you know how to get someone the best price point. You know how to look after them and make them feel comfortable and make it seamless.
Okay. So I'm trying to decipher this. Your next clients are actually your current buyers.
Yep.
So you're paying a great deal of attention to them. And you're really trying to be family already with your buyers. And the other thing that you're saying is it takes time. So obviously those buyers, whether they buy from you or not, after a little while, they become your clients because of that experience that you've given them. So I get that. But you spoke about drive, right? I'm a brand new real estate agent, or let's say I'm a seasoned salesperson. I'm sitting with you. I'm asking you questions. And you're telling me these things. You're giving me these bits of advices. What's the one thing that you would say from the years of giving people advice, there's one thing that's missing from other people? How come they can't take those words that you've given them, including the word drive, which you haven't explained yet, and not replicate the same thing? If I take a recipe of a salesperson to make a cake, mm-hmm. and I go home and I put the same recipes and I use the same quantity, I have to have the same cake. So how come they don't?
But we're human beings, which means the same ingredients for me don't work as the same ingredients for you to make okay. the same cake.
Yeah.
So it's important to understand who you are and also understand I could have Chris say exactly the same words as me, but if he delivers it differently to me, it feels different. You know, and I think the psychology of that is very, very interesting because people know whether you're being genuine or authentic yeah. or not. And yeah. if you don't have that about you as a real estate agent, you might get listings, but you're not going to get a lot of listings. And if you do get a lot of listings, you're going to probably get some listings that aren't actually motivated to sell because they're like, yeah, they've done the sleazy sort of sales pitch.
Yes.
Where people go, it's a used car salesperson. Yes, they did this. They started high. They dropped it. And then there's just absolutely no connection there, which means it probably goes to the next agent who does build that connection with them. So for me, it's very important if you're a new salesperson, one, why are you in this job? You know, I started, I didn't know why I was in this job. I just knew I was interested in it. And, you know, I was excited. But why are you here? How well do you want to do? Do you want to be mediocre? Are you happy to just be mediocre? In my eyes, I tell my staff this all the time, or new salespeople, if that's what you want to be, it's probably not the industry that you want to be in, because there's so many other things that you could go and do in order to be more comfortable. Real estate is tough if you want to do it at a high level and you want to be earning a good amount of money consistently. It does take all of those sacrifices. So for me, it is all about learning your ingredients to make that cake that people connect with. And we can do all the sales pitches, we can do all the sales training in the world, but if you say one thing with the wrong intonation or with the wrong smile on your face to someone who's just told you an important part of their life, and you giggle at it or whatever it may be, it changes that whole conversation moving forward. So it's a little bit more in depth than a consistency around the same conversation with exactly the same people every day. And it has to be different.
Wow.
Because that person is different on the other side of the table.
Okay, so I get it. So there's no need for real prospecting in the long run, because at the beginning you did. Mm-hmm. There's no need to really put yourself in the cold face if you have built a very good foundation. But I get it now. The energy that you give your clients from day dot has to be authentic and genuine. I get you.
Yeah.
Right? Now, let's go back to that word drive. What drives you? What is it that gets you? How long have you been in real estate now?
10 years last week.
All right. So what drives someone who's been 10 years in real estate to have that same drive as if it was day one?
Growing up, we didn't have a lot, and a lot of conversations revolved around money. I don't want to live like that. I want to be safe. I want to be, you know, in a position that if I want to do something, I want to do it. So that's part of it. And then now with Latari and Carson, that's the other part of it. I want them to have a good life. I want them to be able to do what they want to do. You know, I want to just be able to go out and do what we like and enjoy without having to think too much about, okay, well, is it worth it? Or is it worth the experience? Like, it's always worth the experience. If you want to do something, I think you should have that ability to do that. And that, for me, drives me automatically. But also, I love to grow and I love to learn. And that's something that has come more later in life than I think earlier on in life, where you realize that the person you are, the way that you perceive things, it changes over time. You know, you mellow, you realize that not some of the things that you thought were so important younger in life are not really that important.
Yes.
And I enjoy that journey of growth and understanding why people tick and what is it about that person that made them that way. Why are they doing this? Why are they thinking that way? And, you know, in this industry, we see a lot of people that say things and you go, why do you think that? But that intrigues me. So there's a big drive there just to always be learning and to pushing and for lifestyle off the back of that, which is a big part of it.
Yeah. So being interested in people is a amazing fuel. Is that something that you said it came a bit later on? Can you put finger on it? Can you say there was an event in life, or is it a natural part of your personality that's risen up to the top over the years?
No, I think I was always, if outside of work, I'm a bit recluse. So that's why you'll see me on a cliff or by myself or just with the fellow. Like I'm not in the public eye. I try and stay out of that if I can. So for me, it would have been when I came into the industry, and it was seeing Mum go through all her health issues, and seeing how other people viewed what was happening with her and how easy they thought it would be to change her lifestyle in order to make her better. Now, she had a disease that was with her for 30 years before it finally took her, and that to me was very interesting, to think that people always have a viewpoint, but they never really understand that person. And, you know, she always smiled. She was in pain all the time, but she always smiled and said I was okay. And towards the end, where she was quite sick, she was with her specialist, and we were there, and the specialist said, how are you feeling? She goes, I'm okay. There's people that are, you know, there's people that are worse off. And he sort of looked at her and he said, no, there's not. I can tell you're in pain, you feel unwell. So it changed the way that I looked at things, and I was thinking, well...
How old were you then?
It will be 10 years this year as well. So it's obviously whilst I was doing my course down here.
Your course or the exam?
The exam, yeah. Course and the exam.
So you went through the course. Your mum spent her last few days in hospital.
Yeah.
You're here.
Yeah.
And as you were going through the recruit course, you still gave it your best. But what astounded me was that you then had an exam to do, right? And you had to pass that in order to start with Wisebury. And it was a day your mum passed on.
Passed away, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I think we hear, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, you do a lot of study, you hear people say that there's an event in your life that sometimes changes you for the negative or the positive. Yep. And, you know, with Jet, the same sort of thing with the speech that he gave in our sales training day last week. That, for me, changed the whole way that I looked at life. She was super excited. She was in hospital. I just started, I was in a week or two maybe, and she had cards in the hospital and she handed those out. She was genuinely excited for me to have this opportunity. And it probably changed the way I view things. I'm not saying it's the only drive, but it definitely did change the way I looked at things and the way that I sort of did life. And there's always ups and downs, and there was always things that, you know, you look back at and you go, okay, well, you know, I probably wouldn't redo that right now. There's, you know, if it's drinking or if it's partying or doing all those sorts of things. But it did put me in a very different spot where I started to realize that people are quite intricate, and I wanted to understand that a little bit more. And this job actually allows you to do that. You get an insight to someone's personal life, and you're not their psychologist, although sometimes they expect you to be.
But aren't we human beings, as psychologists, we first psychologists for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because psychology is the study of human emotion and behavior.
Absolutely.
Well, we need to know ours. Yeah. Right. So,
yeah.
But you're right. The beauty about this thing, we meet so many people. We have to use psychology.
Yeah. Mm. And I have an ability to, and whether this is natural or whether this is learned, where you can read, I can read a room very well. I know if someone's uncomfortable. It's not that I don't say things that are inappropriate times, I do. But I know from someone's reaction if they're feeling uncomfortable. So I think that is a big part of real estate as well, because if you can read body language, you can understand someone's intonality or the way that they looked at you or the way they raised their eyebrows and looked away. That's a big part of understanding them as a person and then building that deeper connection. Okay, so that might have been important to you because you seem a bit shocked by that. Is there a story behind that? It's learning about that person so that you can connect with them on a deeper level. But then you understand their motive around selling. It's not just the motivation to sell. It's the motivation as a person as why something is important to them. People want to sell for all different reasons. Financially, moving to a bigger house, smaller house, family, separate, all that sort of thing. That's always there. But understanding them as an actual person is a deeper level yet again, because then you can understand, no, I don't think they're going to be happy with taking that route. Them as a person, they're very morally strong. I will never look back at a situation and feel like I've lied to someone or told them, you know, an offer that's not real. People that, you know, I hear it all the time, agents that say people come through open homes and they had no one through. Like, that's never a position I want to be in. I would prefer to have the harder conversation and say, unfortunately, there was no one through. You know, how does that feel? It's never good. But you have to be able to read that person and realize that sometimes you have to deliver that bad news, and that will help you get to the next step.
Yeah,
it doesn't always work out. You can't help everybody. I've learned that as well.
Yeah, but what if people are scared? You know, I've been doing this for a long time now, and I profess to never lie, which got me into a lot of trouble many times in my life, because sometimes telling the truth, but is it possible for top salespeople not to sometimes even distort the truth? I see that. I recognize it. But I don't say a word because I'm going, well, it's sad that they're doing it. There's people listening right now and they're going, no, these guys are full of it. You know, you can't be that kind of salespeople. I listened to a tape that a friend of mine sent me yesterday, and after a few minutes I had to switch it off because the person was talking about manipulation and how I push my clients into saying this and how I condemn it. Mate, I don't need to have these kind of things in my head. Is it possible to just tell the truth? And tell the truth not only with clients, but with everyone that you deal with, in whether it's in life, at work, or private life.
Well, if you go to a financial planner or a doctor or someone who's studied, who has done a degree, and you're paying them for their time and their advice, we normally won't question those people. Because you're going to that person as an expert in their field in order to get the information that you need to better your life. So if you're an expert in your field and you know the market and you know how to push and pull and make things happen and you've got consistent results there, at what point do you need to lie or embellish the truth? Mm-hmm. They simply take the advice or they don't. And sometimes, like I said, it doesn't work. But if you're trying to help them to the best of your ability, then you are in a situation where being an expert, they should trust you, but you have to build that trust in those first conversations. It's not an automatic trust. Just because you're great at your job or you're number one in an area doesn't mean you're the best person for them. So you have to show them why you are the best person. And for me, I find that I get a lot more respect from being straight and not lying and having that upfront relationship and being a little bit more direct at times if we have to be, than having to cover those snowballs of lies that people get themselves into trouble with, where they then find themselves at the end of the line where they go, that relationship's actually done because I've damaged it too much. I would prefer them to walk away from me and say, look, we've tried everything that we can. You obviously just couldn't get the job done. Than for them to say, you lied about this, you lied about that. That would affect me much more.
Yeah.
Because there is situations where houses won't sell. There is situations where owners may not listen to the right advice. There is situations where owners can be a bit unlucky and all situations change. And if you realize that, but you are an expert in your field, you know how to deal with that. You might have dealt with it before. It might be a brand new situation, but then you need to strategize and make them feel comfortable. And as long as you can make them feel comfortable and say, are you on the same page with me? Do you trust me? There shouldn't be an issue.
Now I get it. So your style is really trust selling. Mm. I get it. So I'm a person who's been in real estate for more than 10 years. I've been struggling all my life. So what would be your advice to for someone like me to turn things around?
Reassess.
Okay, mate. I give you a few lines. You can't just give me an answer that is one word.
So you have to look at your patterns. If yes. you are struggling after 10 years, then there's patterns there that you've followed in order to put yourself in that position.
Yes.
And they typically will not be healthy patterns because there's either not enough drive, there's not enough push, there's not enough results, there's not enough consistency. If you do the numbers, this is the older sales line. If you do the numbers will come.
Yeah.
Business creates business.
Yep.
There's no doubt about that because it's perception in real estate. I have friends drive through Kilka and they're like, oh, you've got every house on the market. I don't have every house on the market. I've got a few over there, but it's perception. People see you and it's what we talk about with the brain. It's an automatic perception. Someone starts talking to me about a listing and they go, oh, your signs are everywhere. They've only noticed that because now they've recognized that my signs are there. They've always been there, but it's a perception. So as someone that struggled, you have to create your perception and rebuild yourself. Start from scratch. Do the numbers. Do the work. There is no getting around that. There is no easy option, and especially after 10 years.
Yeah.
If you're struggling, something is not working. So go back to the consistent steps and make sure, as mundane and as boring as it is, that every day is the same from your structure, because then you will start to see the results fall into place.
Right.
And that means doing your follow-ups on open homes, ringing your buyers, speaking to cold calls. If you're 10 years in and you've got cold calls, it's unfortunate, but you have to get yourself to another level.
Yep. Okay.
So make those cold warm and yep. turn them into opportunities, and that business will create business.
Yes.
But it requires
but
work.
But be patient.
Be patient. Right?
Hard work and patience, because yep. it doesn't happen overnight.
Absolutely.
Okay, so but 10 years ago, when you first started in real estate, there was no TikTok. These days, we have TikTok plus another 500 kind of apps. Mm-hmm. So, would you do things different?
I'd probably invest more money into those sites with people that are actually good at it, because I'm not good at it.
Yes.
I do a post every now and then, and that's not consistency. So, if we're talking about consistency, then I would pay someone to manage and look after those things. But I would also figure out how important is it in my market. How much do people look at that, because I have young agents that come in and obviously we're a high turnover industry and they go, I want to spend, I'm doing this on Instagram and I'm doing this. I'm like, how many times you picked up the phone? That is going to be the difference. How many times, if you're sitting in the office doing Instagram and the other agent who's just turning over his first year and starting to get some runs on the boards because he's door knocking and he's in front of people and people see him, which one's going to be the real winner? Social media, in my eyes, is going to play a big role in the future because digital is just going to become pretty much everything. It's nearly that way now.
Yeah.
But it's not the only option, and it's definitely not an option that can replace a real conversation with a person face-to-face for them to go and say, you're a decent human and I trust you and I believe that you do the best job for me to get the price.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean, you can see it. I mean, in your office, Anthony is very social media. You're not, and yet your results are on par. So you must be doing something right. And I think that the desire to build honest and trustworthy relationship from day dot has been your biggest strength, which, by the way, will beat any form of social media, because when you stop it, well, what have you got behind, you know? I think that what you're doing is very strong.
Yeah.
So In recent times, I know you've been a number one agent. You've done a lot of hard work, and a lot of people don't realize it, but you also have a health. Your health is not 100%.
Mm.
Do you want to share with us, like, how do you conquer that? Because how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So I've had quite a bad mountain biking accident and found out that it had triggered or started to trigger some sort of factor in my body, which now it's converted to type 1 diabetes. For a long time, I didn't medicate. I sort of went against the grain, which does leave a little bit of a cloud around every time you feel sick. You know, is it because I'm not medicating? I have started medicating now just at night. But it's difficult, but again, it's about mindset and it's about how I control it. I've definitely slipped. I'm not as strict as I used to be. Which is why now I'm also not drinking, and I'm trying to get a little bit more clarity and health back into my life, because as much as everybody continues to tell me, without your health, you actually will not have anything. So it's not worth pushing until the point that you don't have your health. So that's becoming a lot more important to me as well. So I need to get back on top of that, because it has lapsed recently. But I guess the easiest way is that everybody has their battles. It doesn't matter whether you've got a health issue, whether you've got a child that's sick, whether you've got a separation or, you know, financial issues. Everyone has their own set of issues.
Yes.
So I think if you can look at it from that perspective and realize that every single day that you come into an office with 20 people, they all have their own sets of issues that are important to them.
Yes.
You know, it's like seeing a baby cry because their favorite toy's gone away. That is their life. That's what there is most important to them at that time. So we all go through that, but we just get to adulthood where it becomes a little bit different. And I think if you use it as an excuse, then it's going to become an excuse. You know, you can always say, yes, well, I've got this. Well, everybody's got, you know, there's people out there that are much more sick than I am and do their job, or yeah, have children that, you know, have disabilities or learning disabilities, or that's much worse than what I'm going through. I can, if I put my mind to it, I can control that myself as best I can. I can't control it to the point where it's not there, because it's incurable, but at the same time, it is something that if I manage properly, I can not make it an excuse. And that's my mindset around it, is to not make it an excuse and allow myself to still live a fairly normal life.
Okay. While we're here, because I, you know, my style, I usually go in every direction. So I want to ask you this question now. For a long time, you really did not care about medications or even maybe attending to your health. For a long time, you heard people saying to you, mate, take it easy. And you kept on going 200 miles an hour. What's changed? What's a click? Because there has to be a click for that recognition now, number one, but also, what's that decision done while something happened with your mum in hospital?
Yeah, so that was part of the reason that I chose not to medicate, is because I saw her go through every stage,
right,
of her disease, and every single time that she got to a different level where she had an issue, it was normally from a new medication that was prescribed to her that she would have a new side effect. And what they would do is she would have this side effect. It would make her life horrible. Again, a doctor sees you for a certain amount of time. We see her for the weeks that she struggles through things. And she go back to the doctors and then they prescribe a new medication that would have a new issue. Instead of helping her be comfortable the way that she was and figuring out, okay, is there another way that we can do this? It was very westernized. It was very standard practice.
Yes.
I didn't want to go down that line. I did a bit of research. I had a bit of resent, I guess, when I first found out, because I was actually feeling quite healthy. I've never been really unfit. I've always been quite active. So it was a surprise, and even the doctors were surprised. They took a little while to diagnose it. And for me, when I went into the diabetes education clinic, which is where they start to tell you to inject insulin and do this, they said, have you got type 2 diabetes? Like, are you a rare case of type 2? Because I looked quite fit and healthy. And I said, no. And they said, oh, normally people with type 1 are very sick. Do you feel sick? I said, not at all. So, and then they said, okay, well, we're going to take you through. You're going to have to start injecting. And I said, do I have to continue to inject forever if I start now? And they said, yes. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. So it's obviously risky. And there's people that have done this where I've seen them, they've passed away. And it's about taking it seriously. But at the same time, I have let that go. And I did always be the one that said, don't worry about it. I think as an Australian male growing up, that was part of my background. You know, males don't whine about things. They don't talk about feelings. They don't talk about being sick. They just keep going.
Yep.
And that's probably part of my makeup. But at the same time, realizing that I might not be around to help Latari or Carson if I do the wrong thing in the long term, or not looking after myself, it's not the best option. So I have started to realign that. Unfortunately, at the moment, I haven't taken any steps to really focus on that, but it is a part of my goals for this year.
Right. What, to start medicating?
No, the medication. So as I said, I've started that just at night time now.
Right.
But I don't medicate like cane for every meal and things like that. I mainly exercise to bring it down. I medicate at night because my sugars go too high overnight, so I need to try and keep it down. But I normally keep pretty good control of it. But my exercise and my eating habits have just gotten a little bit out of hand. And that's that three circles. It's business and health or private is lacking.
So if I get it wrong, just please correct me, but I thank you so much for sharing this. So for seeing a loved one going through this much pain, you made a decision, right, about your health, not to medicate. And now seeing loved ones and having the desire to look after them, you're about to go against that decision.
Yeah, within reason. So I'm going to continue with what I'm doing with the overnight medication, so the overnight slow-release insulin. But I'm going to fix some eating habits and some exercise habits to bring it back down so that I can focus on living that way. But it is purely off the basis of what I've seen mum go through and then the research that I've done, where I just realised that it's very easy just to be prescribed medications these days. And diabetes is very manageable if you do it right. There's a lot of people that are still triathletes and, you know, high sports, you know, awards for boxing or like a lot of different things, football players. So it's very much
top sales people.
It's not quite as active, but it is something that is manageable if you get it right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And hence, for a lot of us, we'd have no excuse. Right, we don't have that, so we have no excuse. We only have our own health, our own two legs. We can go and do stuff. Mm. Yeah, our own two feet. Mm. Now, in your office, we have Anthony McVicker, who also looks after 25 listings. You too. So the office is already at 50. How does it work for an office to have that much? Then you have sales, other salespeople, obviously with less. And how do we do that? Because now I want to talk about the next thing. You're also a sales manager. Mm. So how do you combine all of this and not have salespeople going, hold on, you're not looking after me?
Yeah, I think that there is a fine line. And like I said, my leadership style is leading from the front. Because if you're leading from the front, there is no excuse for people to not respect that you are doing the numbers and that you can do the numbers. and not just sitting there giving orders and dictating about what you should be doing and how you should be doing it, because there's no better form of leadership than to be in the trenches and leading by example in that way than sitting back and having two listings and going, well, you should be on 10 and why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? Because for me, that just doesn't work. And that's not what I want to do anyway. I love helping people. I love seeing, you know, Chris and Kieran, have they've come up in such a short period of time and, you know, really sort of become contenders to push the envelope for salespeople that are fairly new. You know, yes. Kieran's got a lot of experience with his previous sales background. Chris has got his own experience through military. And seeing, again, the tick, why? You know, Chris is very black and white. He doesn't understand the grey, and there's so much grey in real estate. Kieran's very much a closer. So, it's we help them with some listings, which is the way that obviously Wisebury works, and put them on some certain things, and then they have to go out and also get their own. So it works quite well, and it allows them. It's a certain period where when new staff come in and you're getting their profile up and they're on listings and they're selling properties, that works for a certain amount of time, but then they realise, okay, this is where I need to get my own listings. This is where, and so we slowly get to that point where. Yeah. They want to be doing that, and they want to be doing that better. We don't have farm areas as such. We've got areas that people focus on, but they're not actually a dedicated farm area. Because it was Anthony and I, we were listing everywhere, and it becomes harder. But I think if you limit people to those areas, just with our situation, with our office, it doesn't probably quite work as well as some offices that have to have the dedicated farm areas. And there's always, it doesn't matter which office, what brand, who you are from, top salesperson to associate starting out, there is always going to be crossover in sales.
Yeah.
There's always going to have to be a conversation that you have to have around whose lead is this? How does this work? Have you done the work? Have you showed that it's yours? And we try and make sure that those conversations are up front, because otherwise it does get a little bit messy, and it does get a little bit, you know, it's it becomes an issue within the sales team, which you just don't want it to be.
So, by not having a dedicated farming area, it is then possible that you have not only Anthony and yourself on 25-25, but the other four salespeople to be each on 25.
Correct. Yeah. It just doesn't have those boundaries, you know, within. And our idea around things is obviously if you're willing to do the work, then you can have that many listings. And how you get about those listings is by putting in the effort.
Yeah.
And anybody can list more properties then. And then that way you're not just allowing one suburb that might have a low turnover. Like Kilcare and surrounds is a low turnover. But 50% of my listings are over there at the minute. So it's one of those things. And average sale price is much higher over there as well. So having my feet in both camps can be tricky on a Saturday when you're running between open homes and you've got half an hour. But in the same time, the boys are doing quite well across your minor and Edelong, so we've got all those bases covered, and it very much does become a team environment. You know, you have Chris or Kieran looking after some listings that they match that person. You know, you might say, okay, Thomas, yep, you're a bit more direct. Kieran, you're on that one. Perfect. Or, you know, we have someone that might be a little bit more conscientious, and we put Chris there because, you know, he matches that person really well. But they also have to do the work in order to get those opportunities.
Now, I'm not sure that this is in the realm of sales management or just sales, but in the past, new people couldn't really fly that fast around you because it was still always Anthony and yourself.
Yep.
And then the rest were dying slowly. What has happened now? Because lately, anyone who's just joined your office, they seem to just fly fast. They seem to fly very high, very quickly. What's changed?
I think we look at things differently. I think we realise that we have to give people more time. We still lead from the front. And we still make sure that we're high performing. But to understand that these guys want to do well also, and give them the benefit of, you know, you give them a few listings or leads here, but then they go out and do that work and they earn that respect as well. It allows people to really grow a lot quicker. Because if you've got both there, if you've got someone that you're just giving everything to, then it becomes, well, it's always going to be the case. They're always going to be, well, where's the rest of the leads? Whereas if you can teach them to do both, you can get some opportunity off the back of our things, or if you can get some opportunity off Rod and Troy's stuff, then that's what we're here to do, because there is opportunity everywhere.
Yep.
And we're a high listing and selling team for the area. So that perception and that profile will help you get there, but you have to find your own song out there to make sure that you can get your point across to people. And there'll be people that connect much more with, you know, Kieran than, say, you know, myself or vice, anyone in the team.
Yes.
And then you get to that scenario, you go, yep, that'll suit you, so you go to that one. Or this property's here, go out to that one. And that just allows that team environment to really grow. And then I think the biggest thing that has changed, certainly in the last 12 months, is that we have managed to iron out a few bugs, and we did have some bugs. You know, there's with any sales team, I don't care where it is, whether you're the best office in Australia, there's culture.
Yes.
And there's respect, or there's a team environment, and we've figured that no single person is more important than the team, self included. And that allows us to now have some very honest conversation and genuine conversations where I know if I go away for a week, those guys have got my back and things will be looked after. That's a big important part for me.
Yeah, so you went from a team of champions to a champion team concept.
Yeah, yep.
I get it. Okay. Now, going back to being a salesperson, as a top salesperson, you know, I talk constantly about skill, mindset, and self. Which one is most important for a top salesperson?
Self.
Do you want to explain that a little bit? Mate, stop saying one word. I'm starting to believe you don't want to share.
So if you don't understand yourself and what makes you tick for a start,
yes,
you can't help someone. Because if you're only there for the money, it's the wrong idea. You'll do all the wrong things.
But when you listen to most of these champions talk, they always put skill and talk skill and always talk as if they, you know, the pseudo Anthony Robbins mindset is up there. It's very interesting to have someone sitting here and say, well, self is crucial.
If you have a self-belief, if you believe that you can genuinely help someone, no matter what you say, even from your body language without saying a word, they will believe you more because you're authentic. If you don't have that and you have your salesperson hat on and you're trying to get a listing because you're desperate for a listing or you're desperate for a sale, they will know that you're desperate for a sale. And that is the biggest difference for me. Like, I'm lucky enough now that I can align myself with clients that do align with me, and I will say no to people if I feel like it's not going to be the right match. And that's a lucky position to be in the career where you can choose, do you align with someone? Are you on the same page? Will you get along? Because life's too short to sit down and spend 6 or 8 or 10 weeks in some areas with someone that you don't align with, that you're just going to butt heads. That's not a good relationship to have with yourself or with that person. So for me, self is most important. Why are we there? You know, why are they selling? Do you align? Do you believe that you're on the same page? Not so much on the same page with everyone's always going to be different on price or some boundaries, but is this person someone that you can see you giving a big portion of your life that takes you away from your family to help them get the best result?
I can hear some people saying, but hold on, if he's got 25, instead of just making a choice based on self, he should just lift his fee to 4%.
Yeah, look, it's not a bad option. Yeah, it's a lot of listings to have, but I genuinely have that. It's when you come into the industry, that phone rings, you answer it. After 10 years, it's still very hard to not answer it.
Yes.
Because now it rings, a lot of the times it is people saying, hey, we're looking to sell, we've heard good things, or whatever it may be, which is, again, a bonus to being consistent and being at that higher level where people have taken notice or have realized that you do a good job. That's what it comes down to. They're not ringing you just because they saw your face on a sign, they went, he's the guy. They've actually done a little bit of research.
Yes.
So being in control of yourself is the biggest part of that.
Yep.
You will match the person's energy. You will have better conversations. You know, there's no worse feeling than having the phone ring and going, I don't align with this person. We're not on the same page. We're not having good conversations. We're not even having honest conversations. For me, that is working backwards to making the rest of your listings and your focus going away from them because you don't align. And then you take the focus off everybody else to put it into that one person. It's the very similar to having that toxic person amongst a winning team or an NRL team or a basketball team or our sales team, eventually people will start to go bad. That's the same with clients, that if you're not on the same page, you're better off letting them go with someone that is on the same page with them.
So what do you do to make sure that you keep on building self?
So for me, it's about always learning. I'm always I'm listening to podcasts. I don't read a lot, but I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I find reading, for me personally, I'm a very hard person to switch off, so it's hard to sit there and read. But I do enjoy listening to music and listening to podcasts. So I do get into that.
But you can't remember everything in a podcast. Like I do a lot of the podcasts, and quite often I have to listen to a podcast 4 or 5 times to get the gist or 100% of it. Sometimes it's a one-liner that's come out that you miss because you pay attention to a red light, you know, things like this.
Yeah, and I think that's important. But if you really connect with that podcast, you'll listen again, just like people read books again.
Right.
You know, if you love a great book, you'll read it again because you want to get that lesson out of it. For me, I'm very much, as I've gotten older, I've realized that there's good in everything that you can take out of, even things that you may not want to do. There's a good lesson to learn out of that. And even if it's only one lesson, if you're going to a seminar or an ARIC or whatever it may be, and, you know, for me, I don't go to a lot of those things, but I go, okay, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to take one thing away from it, or at least a couple, so it's worth my time. So growing and understanding that I'm quite eager to learn, that's what still puts me in front of people. Because I enjoy learning about them. I understand learning about their life. Like, I've got some people that have incredible stories, you know, and it's not always the people that you expect, like some of the high profile people or, you know, that I've sold properties to or for. It's actually sometimes it's little old Margaret down the road who's got the most incredible story about her husband going to World War II and this. And it's like, it's crazy. And you learn from that, and you learn that people become the people that they are from those conversations.
Yes.
So it's not just about selling a place. It's actually a bit about that person's life.
No, I can see it. I can see it. The investment in the self is so important because you can take it back home. Mm. When you are around Carson or Latari, all of those lessons that you've learned from dealing with different self, because you understand yourself, it makes a difference. I can see now. I'm really enjoying this podcast because I can see two types of real estate agents. One that invests in profile, and you actually investing in reputation.
Yeah.
And I believe that the people who invest in profile, they're only making a living. I believe you're building a business. You're building something that keeps on going, whether you want the business or not. And after a little while, profile we lose to reputation.
Yeah,
that's the difference between what you're doing and other people out there. I really like this. Can I just ask you, probably to end this podcast here now, how do you know you're leading an inspiring life?
By picking up on some of the mistakes that you realize you want to change. So if I don't learn things every day about myself where I go, I don't want to do that again, or I want to minimize that, then I know that I must be getting myself to a better state and to a better self. So if I went out there and every day was exactly the same, I'd be concerned, because then you're just in that routine, and that routine is the comfort bubble where people get themselves to, and then it's very difficult to get out of that side. So I try and take every day and find a reason to push myself or find a reason to learn something new, because I do genuinely love learning. And, you know, watching what makes people tick, I know you have this as well, but watching what makes people tick is just incredible. When you have that, I guess, want to understand why someone does that, or even just to watch people and see what their reactions are, it's endless, because there's people everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it puts you in a position where you're constantly learning.
Yeah.
And I think if you're constantly learning, you're only going to get yourself better, as long as you want to learn.
Yeah.
If you're very set in your ways, and, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are, and I completely agree that you have your DNA. If you don't have drive, or if you don't, you can't create, you have to create it some way, but someone else cannot create it in you. So people can be very set in their ways, and there is no other option And for me, that's a danger because I look at that and I see people that 100% believe in what they're saying. But then you realize, hey, what if it's wrong? What if it's just what you've come to believe is true,
yeah,
but someone can prove that that's wrong?
Yeah.
Perception. Yeah. It's crazy. Like that for me is one of the biggest misconceptions out there,
yeah,
when we're talking about sales, business of any kind, you know, football team, anything in life.
Yes.
The way you say something to someone can be perceived in many different options depending on that person on the other side of the table and how they're feeling, what they hear, they miss a word, the intonation, the way you deliver it.
So what do? You have to repeat it?
Yes. It's wrong. No. Yeah. But it's that, I think if we could communicate better, everybody would learn a lot more.
Yeah.
But as humans, we become very set in our ways and we have our set of beliefs and then we want to push that upon other people.
Yeah.
And we believe that only that set of beliefs is correct.
It's been a long time coming, but I'm now seeing someone who is taking the word learning to a different level. Some people, they use the word learning, but really it's entertainment. Yeah. You know, they go to conference, they say they're going over there to learn, but really it's to entertain themselves.
Yeah.
They come away, get into the rah-rah thing for a few days, and then they go back to their old ways, you know. The learning that you take in, it's empirical. I can see it. You use a concept or you see in people's behavior. If you see in their behavior, you try to understand. If you hear a concept, you try to see it in people. So really, it's empirical. It's fantastic. But, mate, you've got something about you in terms of wisdom that's really clicked. I still remember like 10 years ago when I first trained you, how it was, no, I just want the dollar. I just want the dollar. And no, don't worry about my health, mate. It's a dollar. If I can have a 28-hour day, let's go. Let's invent it, you know? And now I'm seeing someone who's talking like a father, you know? Someone who's going, hold on, we don't have to waste this energy. We can transform it, transcend the energy, and use it in different form. It's a beautiful thing. So would you put this to Latari?
Yeah.
Again, can we be more than one word answer, mate?
Yeah, look, I mean, she helps me with everything. She's the rock in the background. So you have to have that support in the background because I think I've seen the other side where people don't understand it. And now that she's got her business, that is her maybe, real, like she is invested in that. And, you know, I think there's a light bulb for both of us where we both look and go, okay, she understands me and now I understand her as well.
Yes.
Because I can see that all her time is not devoted to me now. And that would have been how she felt as well. And that it's a beautiful moment when you realize, okay, this is how you felt because that's now how I feel.
Yes.
But I'm so proud that she's doing what she's doing and that she's doing something that she loves as well. Mm-hmm. And she's giving it a go and most people don't because it's stressful for her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's very good.
Yeah, because Carson, how old is Carson?
Nine, just turned nine.
So she's doing that. She's helping you, but she also has a child who's still in, what is it, year five, isn't it?
Year three.
Year three. Yeah. And so there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And there's that guilt that comes with that as well, which we all have, the guilt that is she around enough?
Yeah.
Or is she concentrating too much on the business? But he realizes as well, like he's quite mature for a young kid. He realizes why we're doing it and he realizes the bigger picture and we have some good conversations around that. So it's quite good.
Oh, awesome. Mate, I saw you behave with him in Bali, mate. You're a better father than me, you bastard. Anyway, hey, listen, I thank you so much for this. Josh, I know that there's plenty of podcasts and I was thinking of why we were doing this one here. And I can't wait maybe to take the time and delve into that world because I think the world of self means everything. I think that if you have the world of self fixed up, the rest can follow. And if you work on just the skill and mindset and you have a bankrupt self, it's only going to lead to bad sabotaging. Whatever you're doing right now, you're on a very good path. I'm really proud of you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers.